You can find this podcast and others at Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
The Liberals Gun Corner, a proud member of the Gun Rights Radio Network, hosted by Cowboy T, San Francisco liberal with a gun. This podcast is always available at www.liberalsguncorner.com, and you can email us at cowboyt@liberalsguncorner.com. Cowboy T here. Welcome to episode 28. Last time we had a little discussion on some aspects of proper range etiquette. A lot of you who listen are regular shooters. You go to the range on a regular basis. That means you know and I know that there are a lot of new shooters nowadays. And that's a good thing, by the way. I talked a while back about being good ambassadors for the Second Amendment. By necessity, that includes the sport of marksmanship. Making sure that newcomers to marksmanship know these rules of range etiquette is a very important thing for us to be doing. What I may have neglected to focus on, though, is that when we're at the range, and we do this, it does help to be as nice as we can about it. Still forceful when we need to be. Oh, yeah, that doesn't change. And when we can afford to use a little honey versus vinegar as part of that, well, we ought to do so as long as the situation allows us to. Now, talking about all this range-related stuff, that reminds me. Been playing around with yet another gun. Yeah, new toy. Ruger's new SR-45. It's not my toy, but oh, who knows? One of these may be someday. We're going from cowboy-style lever guns, which we talked about before, to the new modern plastic-bodied semi-auto pistols. Been seriously considering buying a 45 of some sort for myself. I got enough brass. Y'all know I do like me some Ruger, there's no doubt about it. And it's not without good reason. Well, guess what? I also like me some Smith & Wesson, some Springfield. Oh yeah, some Remington, some Kimber, I've shot those before, some Colt. Yep, all those too. Heck, even have my eye on a little bit of High Point there. Because inexpensive they may be, but I've shot a few of those High Point pistols, folks. No, they ain't all that pretty. But they do shoot well. Oh yeah. And that's what matters to me. Savage Model 110 rifles aren't considered all that pretty either, especially compared to, say, a Remington 700, which really is a beautiful gun. But those Savages shoot like lasers. So, you know what? Pretty is as pretty shoots, to paraphrase Forrest Gump. If it's quality stuff and it shoots well, well, basically I'm probably going to like it. Bonus points if it fits in my budget, too. Have my eye on the 1911s, the Glock 21, Smith & Wesson's Military and Police MMP, that is, 45. Fired them all. I like them all. Can't really go wrong with any of those. They're definitely on my list for consideration. And now, Sturm, Ruger & Company decided to go mix things up on us even more. They go off and come out with this new variant of their own Glock clone SR series. First came the SR-9 back in 2007. Then came the SR-40. I think that was in 2010. Not sure, but I think it was 2010. And now we've got this new one called the SR-45, which I've been kind of hoping to give a whirl here. Gotten a lot of quality time with the SR-9 since it's one of the rental guns at the shop. So that means I get to play with it. It's a good, reliable 9mm. It is very tolerant of limp wristing, shoots well, and has a mushy trigger. Yeah, it's true. Ruger's plastic pistols are definitely good stuff. Don't get me wrong. They're very good guns, but let's face it, their triggers do feel like cheap plastic. And I found that's pretty typical of Glock-style pistols generally, and that's including the Glocks themselves. About the only exception that way I've ever encountered is Smith & Wesson with their semi-auto M&P series. But, well, S&W has been known for sweet triggers for decades from the revolver days, so yeah, gee, big surprise there. Most plastic gun triggers aren't quite as nice as the Smith & Wessons, though. And, well, Ruger's SR-9 is no exception. Same for the SR-40, which I've dry-fired a few times. Well, the SR-45 certainly follows in that same tradition, just like the SR-9. Trigger feels a little mushy. Yeah, you get used to it, though. Now, the really important stuff. How does it shoot? Heck, does it shoot? Yes, and very well, thank you. Took a magazine or two to get used to where the gun shoots. After that, though, oh, the party started, because I was reliably punching out the number 10 ring at 7 yards. This is despite the plasticky feeling trigger. It was actually easy to shoot this gun well. I'd heard the SR-40 was designed specifically to keep felt recoil to a minimum. Well, whatever Ruger did to the SR-40, apparently they applied that to this SR-45, too. I ran about 350 yards of my 45 ACP plus P load through it over the last couple of weeks. And yes, these pistols are rated for plus P loads, by the way. Yes, there's some recoil. Let's face it, no practical pistol in 45 auto is going to be exactly a pussycat. Ain't going to happen. 45 auto's not a wimpy round. For a 45, this pistol really didn't kick all that much. Really wasn't much more than the SR9, I come to think of it. Well, yeah, a little more, of course, but not that much more. It's manageable. Fortunately, I also happen to have a female friend of mine on hand to try it out, too. And let me tell you, she had a great time with this, and she doesn't have the hand strength that I have, so actually this was a good test. Now, got to tell you, in the interest of full disclosure, this is a brand new gun that I'm being allowed to break in for someone. Yeah, I know. I'm being allowed to shoot the first rounds out of somebody else's gun. Huh. Now, that's something you don't get to do every day, is it? Still got the original grease on it from the factory, this gun does. I am firing it exactly as it came from the factory. Well, wait a minute. Why? Why not do the first inaugural cleaning? Well, it's because that's probably what a lot of people who buy this pistol are going to do. Let's face it, many people aren't like me, and they don't give their brand new firearms an inaugural detailed strip and cleaning before taking them on their first range outing. They just go to the range and try them out. They go shoot them. So, that's what I did. Besides, it's a Ruger. It's supposed to be able to take that. I will report more on this pistol as I get to know it better and spend some more quality time with it. But here's my initial impression after those first 350 rounds. It's a 10-round magazine, double-stacked. Doesn't sound like much, does it, especially compared to the Glock 21's 13 rounds. I remind you, please remember, we're talking about a 45 ACP here. That ought to be enough to take care of business, especially if you got both magazines with you. The mags are a little stiff when stuffing that 10th round in there, so that little speed loader that Ruger includes becomes really handy then. However, after a few times loading the magazine, things start to smooth out. Now I can load all 10 rounds without the speed loader pretty darn easily. Basically, the magazine springs just needed to be exercised a bit. Now they're fine. And since I mentioned limp wristing, let's talk about that. What is it? Well, it's when you don't quote-unquote lock your wrists when you fire the gun. Same effect as not gripping the gun with a good firm grip. You need that good firm grip and the stable platform provided by locking your wrists so that the slide can use all of its inertia and move back all the way with the proper oomph to kick out the spent case and chamber the next round. If you don't, you could get a jam sometimes. Just about every semi-auto out here is more or less sensitive to it. I'm talking about handguns, of course. Glocks, for example. They're very good firearms, no doubt. I like them. But they do tend to be less tolerant of limp wrists. That's the one thing I really like a lot about the SR9. It's very tolerant of limp wristing without jamming. The SR45 seems to tolerate it better than the various Glocks we've got in the shop, but not quite as well as our SR9. I know, same company, but let's face it, it's a different round, different springs, the whole thing. I did have a few failures to eject with the SR45, so I started watching more closely, and yep, sure enough, I was limp wristing a bit. That comes from all my shooting of revolvers recently. You can get away with that when you're shooting revolvers, but that ain't going to fly with the semi-autos. So I decided to do a little test. I shot one magazine with each hand, right and left. I shoot both-handed. And I purposely limp-wristed. And I mean egregious, gratuitous limp-wristing. Really, I was barely holding the pistol at all during a few of those. I wanted to see how it would react. Well, first off, that's how I found out about the relatively low transmitted recoil that I mentioned earlier about this gun. the pistol did not feel like it was even trying to jump out of my hand. This is unlike some others that really do try to jump like jumping beans. I got to say, that's pretty cool. Good on you, Ruger, for that one. Second, I did have a failure to fully feed. So, tap, rack, bang, and all continued as normal. I refed that round through the magazine, and this time it fed just fine and went bang like the rest of them. You know, come to think of it, that actually happened a couple of times. And I remind you, this was not only seriously gratuitous limp-wristing, but I also purposely held, well, if you can call it that, a very loose grip on the pistol. I was barely holding it at all. So I expect a few failures to feed or eject under those circumstances. Even from a quality 1911, I expect that. That's not the gun's fault. I'm actually kind of surprised it didn't happen a little more often. Two other times, there were failures to eject when I'm not sure that I could attribute that to limp-wristing either. I believe I was doing a proper hold for those two shots. Also, I had two failures to feed. However, remember, this is a brand new gun. Haven't finished breaking it in just yet. Haven't field stripped it and given it its first cleaning just yet, but I will pretty soon. Right now, it's basically acting like, well, a new gun that needs a little breaking in, which is exactly what it is right now. Like I said, I'll give you an updated report on this pistol as I get some more time with it. Once I've about, 1,000 rounds or so through it, then I'll do an update. But so far, the thing looks pretty promising. I will say, for the last 100 or so rounds, just over that, those have actually been trouble-free, so it looks like it's getting there. The nice thing about these pistols, I've seen them at gun shows for under $400. You tell me, when's the last time you saw a brand new, major name brand 45 pistol for that kind of price? Except for the high points, I sure haven't. Sure is fun to go shooting and try out a new gun, folks. And it's a good thing I reload my own ammo, too, because I got about 650 more rounds of 45 ACP to go with this thing before I feel comfortable passing final judgment. And when that happens, you'll hear it. The good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll take a short break and be right back with a little talk about religion, or rather, the politics thereof. That, too, is part of the Liberals' Gun Corner. Stick around.
You can hear Gun Rights Radio Network on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones. On demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Gun Rights Radio Network shows can be found under sources.
Remember when I said the Liberals' Gun Corner might be a bumpy ride sometimes? This is one of those times. You know the big three subjects you're not supposed to talk about in polite conversation? Yeah, sex, politics, and religion. Well, we talk about the second one, politics, all the time around here. For a moment, we're going to talk about religion too, and its relation to politics. All I ask is that you hear me out before you pass judgment. Christmas is coming up upon us. Here in the United States, historically, that's meant Santa Claus, maybe going to church, and definitely all sorts of crass commercialism. Get your purple plant feeder for your green puppy dog on Christmas sale! Well, of late, this time of year has also meant some religious and political controversy. Yeah, that too. Not too long ago, there was a bit of a to-do stirred up when the U.S. Post Office came out with an ad for their holiday stamps. This ad had three examples of stamps. There was one about Hanukkah, one about Kwanzaa, and one featuring a gingerbread house with white frosting on top of it. This is a few weeks ago, so pretty recent stuff. To my own amazement, I found out that some folks were getting all bent out of shape about that ad. I'm wondering, what's going on? So, I did a little looking into this. So, what was all that anger about? Turns out, it's because out of the three example stamps shown on the ad, there wasn't a Christian-oriented one. There were Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, and a gingerbread house. My immediate reaction was, wait a minute, how come they're all bent out of shape? Then I read some articles and some commentators' input. Seems like some folks out there are now claiming that this is the post office's quote-unquote war on Christmas, and even more, a war on Christians. Huh? What? That's a hell of an accusation, folks. Any merit to it? Well, let's take a look. I decided to follow the link to the post office's webpage for their holiday stamps. You know, click, click, Google, all that. Okay, I'm looking at it right now. There's a stamp there with the Virgin Mary holding little baby Jesus. There's also one of the three wise men following, the Star of Bethlehem. Yep, that's what it is. There's also one with the Madonna of the Candelabra. Oh, and there's one with Santa and his sleigh. All four of these stamps, I'm looking at it right now, folks. They're front and center on the first page. Oh, also on that page. There's the gingerbread house style, like was in the ad. Hey, there's the Kwanzaa one, too. Hanukkah, check. Two of those, matter of fact. There it is. Evergreen wreath, check. Poinsettia, check. Oh, hey, there's a page two. Let's go take a look. Here, now let's look at page two, see what's there. Come on, website. Ah, there you go. Oh, hey, look here. There are a couple for Eid, E-I-D, too. That's the Muslim holiday that looks to me a lot like Thanksgiving. So, let's count this up here. What I'm seeing here is four stamps commemorating Christianity and a max of two for the other faiths. Heck, there isn't even one commemorating Hinduism, which is kind of odd given, you know, how many folks from India live in this country nowadays. There isn't one for the Wicca either. Well, that's kind of sad given they seem like a pretty doggone peaceful people. You know, come to think of it, there's nothing for Buddhism either. Yeah, no stamps with Happy Buddha on them. That's kind of odd, too, given how many East Asians who follow Buddhism we've got in the good old US of A nowadays. Folks, I'm seeing a pretty darn strong bias for the God of Abraham. That would be the Christian, Jewish, and Muslim God, by the way, and just about nothing for anyone else. So, war on Christians? War on Christmas? I'm not seeing it here. Well, the same week, there was another kerfluffle about Bibles in a Costco. Seems that one Costco out in California, some Bibles had gotten labeled with the fiction tag that the store uses for its fictional books. A Christian pastor who, I don't know, I guess shops there, he took a picture of it, posted it online. I saw all sorts of anger about that, too. Costco declares war on Christians, folks were saying. Oh, the talking heads over at Fox News, oh, they picked it up too. They made all sorts of to-do about this. So I'm wondering, okay, what's going on here? I looked into it. Turns out, what actually happened is this. Costco uses a number of distributors. Of course they do. They're huge. Apparently one of those distributors mislabeled one shipment of Christian Bibles with the fiction tag on them. When Costco was alerted to this, and it seems the pastor didn't bother telling the store about it, just posted his picture to try to shame the company. As soon as Costco found out about that, well, Costco apologized and fixed the issue. So that begs the question, though. How come this pastor couldn't be bothered to talk with Costco, but he had all sorts of time to take the picture, scan it in if necessary, upload it, and make an online post? Doesn't sound like the good pastor was acting all that Christian to me. Seems to me the actual Christian way to handle this would have been to talk with the store and respectfully, ask if this could be fixed. Yes, folks, R-E-S-P-E-C-T goes a long way, especially when you're asking someone to do something for you. Then, if the store poo-poos you and brushes you off, you know, something like, well, that's how they came from the distributor, and they won't fix it, well, then you get that person's name, you go back to the display, snap your picture, and then you contact corporate HQ. Costco Corporate does respond to its customers, folks. Our family's been members of Costco ever since they got started up in the Seattle area. I'm sure they would have done something about that, well, especially given we just had Thanksgiving, and now we're coming up on Christmas time. Remember, this is the company that still maintains the $1.50 hot dog and the soda drink, Oh, and they also have the $9.95 combo and pepperoni and cheese pizzas, specifically because they know their customers love all that stuff. So, what if corporate didn't do something to fix the issue? What do you do then? Well, then, yeah, sure, make your posting. Oh, and on top of that, list the names of everyone you talked with so your story has them backup. Also, post phone numbers if you got them, too. By all means, go to it. But to not give Costco a chance to fix it before trying to publicly shame them? That ain't right. And it sure ain't very Christian. I know, because I used to be a Christian. That ain't what the Bible says do, folks. And then, many of my socially conservative Christian brothers and sisters, and they most certainly are my brothers and sisters, let's make no mistake here, they wonder why the ultra-conservative ticket of Ken Cuccinelli and E.W. Jackson lost to a con man like Terry McAuliffe recently here in Virginia. Well, that's a big part of why. It's also why former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin had to backtrack on some of her criticism of Pope Francis recently. Yeah, get this. Apparently she was on the air talking. And I got to tell you something, a little something I've noticed. I found that when a social conservative refers to someone as a liberal, they generally mean it as an insult, term of disgust. These are also, by the way, usually the same people I see wearing these crosses front and center, so they're highly visible. It's almost like a club badge, you know, like, see, I'm a member of the club. Well, Mrs. Palin, it turns out, who is like that, referred to Pope Francis as liberal in a very similar context on the air. She did not mean it as a compliment, far from it. I guess she tried to come off non-insulting, you know, given Pope Francis's prominence and his popularity. But rest assured, her distaste still came through. I heard it. His sin, what was it? It was actually acting like Jesus. Yeah. This is the same Pope who did not recoil away from that fellow with all the tumors all over his body recently. Remember that? Nope. What did Francis do? If you saw the picture, you know that he embraced that man. Embraced him, just like any other child of God. To Francis, it seems that, well, yeah, church doctrine's important, sure. But what's even more important is how we treat others, how we conduct ourselves, how we judge people. I've read the Bible, folks. I once was a Christian. I see Francis acting a whole lot like two pillars of Christianity. The first is St. Francis of Assisi. This is the same guy who told his followers, preach the gospel, preach the gospel. And if you have to, use words. This is the guy that Pope Francis seems to be patterning his own ministry after. St. Francis's work with the poor has been well known for centuries. To this day, the Franciscan monks are known for doing this. And, by the way, so is Pope Francis. The second pillar of Christianity this guy seems to act like is another man who didn't shirk away, you know, recoil away from people affected by skin diseases. For example, leprosy. There was a time when leprosy was a big problem, and lepers were treated like dirt, folks. Total outcasts. I'm sure you've read the history of that. Just like the untouchables used to be in India. Except with this man. Nope. This guy, he embraced those lepers. Matter of fact, he even gave some advice to one fella, telling him to go bathe 7 times to fix the leprosy. The man who did all this, his name is Jesus Christ. Read the Bible, the story's in there. That's who I see Pope Francis acting like. St. Francis and Jesus himself. Isn't that what a Christian's really supposed to be doing? Following the example Jesus set? And Mrs. Palin somehow thinks this is somehow bad? Really? Christianity isn't about club membership, folks. It certainly isn't about getting irate at an innocent ad by the post office, some mistakenly labeled Bibles at the local Costco, or Pope Francis acting like Jesus. Christianity starts with reading and following the Bible, and it starts with the man or the woman in the mirror who claims to follow it. So to my Christian brothers and sisters, by all means, preach the gospel as much as you can. I actually like a lot of what that book says. Seriously, I do. Even though I'm not a Christian anymore, I don't have any desire to be. Well, that's my choice. Nonetheless, I, the liberal boy from San Francisco, am actually encouraging you to go out and do this. Yeah, go out and do it. Much as you can. And if you have to, go ahead and even use words. Try it that way. Every day of your life. Even when you think the going's kind of tough. My camera lady, tell you a little bit about her. She's a card-carrying Republican, conservative, evangelical Christian. She's everything the liberal gun club forum seems to hate, at least judging by some of the really mean stuff they say on those forums. I mean, really, it's hateful stuff, folks. Well, she does all that. She always asks herself, what would Jesus do? And she acts on it. And that's why she and I are as close as we are and always will be. She's my best friend and the best one I've ever had. We'll be back.
The forums are a great place to interact with the podcasters and listeners to your favorite podcast. Visit gunrightsradio.com and click on the forums button at the top of the page and sign up for your free membership, gunrightsradio.com.
Okay, we're back. We just got through talking about religion. We've already talked about politics many times here in the Liberals Gun Corner. So, when are we going to talk about sex? Oh, why wait? Heck, I'm from San Francisco. Let's get that out of the way right now.
If you choose to have sex, please do so responsibly.
Okay, we've talked about sex. Now, let's get on to more guns. Woohoo! Yeah, all right. Let's get to it. Gotta admit, I'm liking that SR-45 pistol I've been playing around with recently. It's a lot of fun. Once I finish getting it properly broken in, it'll probably run like clockwork. Well, by now you also probably figured out that I like my wheel guns too. If you've listened to any of the previous episodes, they're just as fun. You know, even with all the popularity of the semi-autos, would you believe revolvers still haven't lost their charm? It's true. They still remain popular. And what with all the new gun owners out here nowadays, a lot of people are choosing semi-autos or revolvers as their first guns. They ask a lot about what they ought to get, you know, what's the best model, that sort of thing. People ask me about this all the time, even now. 5 years ago, I didn't really know either. I wouldn't have been able to answer them. For police-style modern revolvers, I basically knew there was Smith & Wesson. Yeah. For cowboy-style guns, well, the old, you know, the old single actions, I knew there was the famous Colt 45. But that was about the extent of my knowledge, folks. That was about it. I didn't even know Ruger or Taurus or Rossi or any of the others even existed. And that points to something. You know, there are a couple of really neat things about working at a gun store. The first, you're surrounded by all sorts of folks who know way more than you do. So you start learning stuff pretty fast. The second really neat thing is you get to try out all sorts of different guns. Yeah, sometimes you even get to try out other people's guns too. So let's talk about a few. This time, we'll talk about five different revolvers over the next couple of segments. They're all the medium frame 38 caliber style. Why those? Well, that's because it's the most popular sort of revolver. And it's popular for a good reason. It's the same reason the cops liked them back then. And in some cases, they still like them today. Oh, don't worry. Rest assured, we'll do something similar for some of the semi-autos, too, in the near future. That's part of why I'm glad I'm getting to play with that SR-45 these days. It's definitely going to be part of that roundup. But for now, we're talking about five revolvers. Got a friend who bought a Smith & Wesson Model 10 and 38 Special. Got another friend who just recently bought a Ruger GP100. Oh, also, plus one of our rental guns is a GP100, so I've gotten to play with that, too. The shop also has a Smith & Wesson Model 686 as another rental gun. We've got a lot of rental guns. My camera lady has a Taurus Model 65. And I've got the Security 6. All of these are 38 caliber. Well, okay, technically they're 357 caliber, since that's the actual bullet diameter of the 38 special cartridge. But, you know, why quibble? Well, anyway, I've been able to compare all these revolvers head-to-head, and I got to tell you, it was a lot of fun doing that. I've gone through so much .38 Special and .357 Magnum, folks. It's a good thing I reload. Oh, man. Or else I'd be doing this podcast from, I don't know, maybe a lean-to if I'm lucky and while eating Top Ramen. Like I said, if I'm lucky, because I'd be homeless after all that ammo if I had to pay factory prices for it. So, having actually tried all these guns, what's the deal with them? Any good? Any gotchas? What's up? Okay, then let's get into it. Let's start talking about them. We will begin with the Smith & Wesson Model 10. That revolver is 114 years old this year. Yeah, it was introduced in the year 1899. It was called the Hand Ejector back then. And it was introduced along with this new thing called the .38 Special cartridge. By the way, all of that, those dates are certified by Roy Jinks, the official Smith & Wesson historian. If anyone would know, he would. Yeah, we're talking the 19th century here, folks. It's been in production that long. This is now 2013. Back then, that same revolver was branded the Military and Police. This is, by the way, the original Military and Police MMP in .38 Special with a 6-inch barrel. In World War II, it served as the so-called Victory model. I've actually gotten to fire one of those, too, once upon a time. Later on, the 1950s is when it got its numerical model designation, Model 10, that it holds today. And it's been available in, various barrel lengths. The most popular one being the 4-inch barrel, because it's easier for cops to carry. Like I said, that revolver remains in production today, 114 years later. There's a reason for that. It's a really good revolver all around. Cops around the world carried them for years till the late 1980s. The Model 10 and later its .357 Magnum variant, the Model 13, that was pretty much the quote-unquote standard police service revolver, especially in the United States, where I am here. Security guards still carry Model 10s today. Heck, get this. Even the Special Police of Washington, D.C. continue to carry them. Yep, that's right. Even now in the year 2013, some police precincts, they still carry the good old Model 10. Why? Well, because they're good, and they work. They're well-balanced in the hand, weight-wise. You know, just enough metal so you feel reassured that you got something durable, but not so much that you need a forklift to hoist the thing up. An all-day range session with a Model 10, it's not terribly tiring, and it's largely for this reason. The trigger on them. Oh, especially the older ones, and by older, I mean the ones up to the late 1990s or so. Oh, they're just sweet. And even the new ones with that new transfer bar firing pin system, they're not bad. Oh, and that's not even counting a trigger job. This is before a trigger job. Now, if you give any of them a trigger job, then any of them becomes sublime. Really, folks, sublime is about the only word I can think of to describe the privilege of getting to fire one of these on the range after it's been tuned up like that. Smith & Wesson is rightly known for quality revolvers, have been for years. Now, this particular Model 10 that I'm talking about, which means it's a traditional blued model, it had, you might say, a quote-unquote trigger job of years and years of use. The more you use it, the more it smooths out. Well, this one obviously got used a fair amount. It's very easy to fire. The sights are of the standard police-style fixed type, and the gun shoots right where the sights point to. Looks like it's probably 30 or so years old. It's got some good, honest muzzle wear on it. The barrel on this one is the standard police service length of 4 inches. The woman who owns this revolver, she is very pleased with her purchase. It was her second gun, the first being a 9mm semi-auto, which she also enjoys. But let me tell you, she loves this revolver. Next up, the GP100. Sturm, Ruger & Company calls this a quote-unquote medium-frame revolver, like the Smith & Wesson Model 10. Folks, if this thing's a medium frame, then it's the Incredible Hulk of medium frames. I'm serious. This thing's built like a tank. I've said about Ruger revolvers before that they could probably survive a ground zero nuclear blast with only minor scuffing. This revolver is a great example of why I say that. It is big, heavy, and grossly overbuilt. The trigger feels like it was designed for someone about to call out to, the power of Grayskull. Seriously, this is a trigger that He-Man and the Masters of the Universe would probably love. But if the trigger pull is a little bit on the long side, it is nonetheless pretty darn smooth. If someone ever actually manages to break one of these revolvers, then they really did something wrong. They're that strongly built. Now, the woman who owns this GP100, what does she think of it? She fell in love with it, I gotta tell you. She had fallen in love with it after trying out a couple of guns, actually. My personal Security 6, which is the GP100's predecessor, we'll get to that later. And our rental GP100 at the store with the 4-inch barrel. Turns out she saw the one with the 6-inch barrel, and she bought that one. She usually shoots 38 Special out of it, but she's also known to shoot those Full House 357 Magnum loads out of it. I've seen her do this. Since most GP100s have the full-length underlug, well, that adds a fair amount of mass to the barrel. Hers being the 6-inch model, it's quite barrel-heavy. And that's actually what makes it so easy for her to shoot. Like I said, she loves that gun. And it's in large measure because it's so doggone massive, it just soaks up the recoil of even Full House 357 loads. 38 Special, that feels like nothing in comparison. It's not quite like shooting a 22, but it ain't too far from it. Not out of that gun. It's also got Hoag monogrips on it, too, which handles any remaining recoil very nicely. She can't get enough of this thing. She's actually allowed me to fire it and spend a little quality time with it. And it's just like every other GP100 I've ever tried out. It's big, bulky, reassuring, and easy to fire. This particular one is the first 6-inch barreled GP100 I've had the pleasure of working with, though. And I can tell you, all that barrel really does help out with muzzle flip. And it's not ported either, by the way. This gun doesn't need any porting. It's like the Matrix. There is no muzzle flip. With proper care, a GP100 should last the next 1,000 years. Now, let's discuss the Taurus Model 65, which my camera lady has. I taught her how to reload, and you can see her not only making the ammo, but also firing it in a couple of the videos. Believe me, folks, you don't want to mess with Miss BHC. That lady can shoot. She's got a gift. She typically fires her Taurus 65 in single-action mode, too, just like you'd do with a Colt single-action army or a Ruger Blackhawk. Never been sure why she does that. Actually, come to think of it, neither is she. She just does it. She just does it instinctively. Oh, and she does it fast, too. I don't know, maybe she was a cattle rustler in a previous life or something. Whatever the reason, she's just naturally good with this thing. Like I said, she has a gift. Now, Taurus Model 65s, what are they? They're basically that company's copy of Smith & Wesson's Model 65. Same size, same basic feel. I've pulled the side plate and taken the revolver apart for a thorough, detailed strip and cleaning. And I can see there's been some divergence on the inside from Smith & Wesson's design over the years. For example, Smith & Wesson uses a leaf spring for the hammer, while Taurus uses a coil spring similar to what a Ruger uses for the Security 6. And some of the other parts are a little different, too. Now, why in the name of heaven would I take this revolver apart so thoroughly? Well, first, it was a used gun, so I wanted to make sure it was A-OK before giving it to her to fire. And second, I wanted to know how these doggone things worked. I'm just that kind of guy. Another thing I'm going to address here. I know a lot of people say, oh, Taurus, they suck. Taurus sucks, Taurus sucks. I've even heard some gunsmiths say that. Maybe some people have had bad experiences with them, but I can't say that. This Model 65 just keeps going and going, just like a Smith & Wesson does. Trigger's pretty good on it, too. Not quite like an older Smith & Wesson. Well, very few things are like an older Smith & Wesson. But still, it's pretty good. Like the Smith & Wesson, the Taurus 65 feels pretty darn well balanced in the hand. Well, it ought to. It's the same dimensions and the same weight. The Taurus 65 is chambered for 357 Magnum, like Smith & Wesson's Model 65. So we did both 38 Specials and 357 Magnums out of this little gun. Folks, this revolver shot just like the Smith & Wesson Model 10 we talked about earlier. Yeah, right where the sights point to. Little tiny groups. Oh, and it handles Full House 357 Magnum rounds pretty well. You know, this is largely due to the rubber grip that comes with it. I gotta give Taurus this. They do have some comfortable, ergonomic factory grips on their wheel guns. They really do. And the nice thing is the price on these tends to be a bit lower than the Smiths or the Rugers. This particular revolver, it looks like it was made in the late 80s or early 90s. That would be my guess. Tell you this, I sure can't complain about how it shoots or its reliability. It's been a good performer so far. Treat it the same way you treat a Smith & Wesson Model 65. I don't see why it wouldn't last just as long. Let's take a short break for station ID, and when we come back, we'll continue with the Smith & Wesson Model 686. Yeah, it's the new 7-shooter. I guess I should say the 686 Plus. Yeah, you heard that right. I said it's a 7-shooter. We'll see you in a moment.
This podcast is supported from donations from listeners like you. Thank you for your support. We welcome one-time donations or $2 a month subscription to help support this podcast and Gun Rights Radio Network in its effort to bring you the high-quality pro-Second Amendment podcasts. Every dollar you donate goes directly back into the network. So visit gunrightsradio.com and click on the donation button. We accept all types of credit cards and PayPal accounts are not required. Gunrightsradio.com.
We're back. Let's pick up where we left off, the Smith & Wesson Model 686. When it first came out in 1980, it was originally a six-shooter. It's like revolvers traditionally always have been. The revolver I got to play with, that's our shop's rental gun. It's a newer model with a 4-inch barrel. And get this, 7 chambers in the cylinder. So instead of a 6-shooter, this one's really a 7-shooter. This 7-shot version is called the 686 Plus, or 686P for short. Came out in 1996. Smith & Wesson could do that because metallurgy's come a long way over the years, folks. And yeah, that's a good thing. Better ways of making metal are always welcome. It's, you know, being one of the newer models, it also has that, well, in my view, unnecessary internal lock system. It also has that new trigger bar mechanism for the firing pin. Now, that I do like. I do consider that an improvement, even though the older firing pin system worked very well for 100 years and still does. And I think it's still an improvement. Now, what is this Model 686 anyway? Well, first off, no, it's not one of Intel's microprocessors. Rather, it's what they call an L-frame revolver, which is basically somewhere midway between the medium-sized K-frame that the cops used to carry. We just talked about that. That's the Model 10. And the large-size N-frame hunting revolver like you see with Dirty Harry's 44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world. No, most cops did not carry 44 Magnums in real life, by the way. Anyway, Smith & Wesson came out with this L-frame because they found out that the K-frame, which is, again, is what the police used to carry, was starting to have some issues after a regular steady diet of those powerful 357 Magnum rounds. 38 Specials, no problem. And that's true even for the hotter FBI loads. But continuous 357 Magnum usage would eventually cause parts to wear out and even the frame to stretch a bit. So, Smith & Wesson decided, okay, we'll beef up the frame some and we'll call it something called the L-frame. Yeah. Turns out to be just what the doctor ordered, too. Our Model 686, it sees a whole lot of usage. With a lot of the rounds put through it, they're full power 357 Magnums. It hasn't, and, you know, this gun hasn't even really had a problem yet. One time, okay, we had to tighten the ejector rod a little bit, but that's it. Remember, this gun gets a lot of usage. It's easily one of our top three rentals as far as popularity goes. Well, it's like its somewhat smaller brother, the 38 Special Model 10, the Model 686, also shoots right where you point it. After all the use it gets, it feels almost like it's had a trigger job itself. And like all Smith & Wesson revolvers I've ever tried, that trigger was already pretty darn good to start with. The gun's got enough beef to soak up a good amount of recoil, too, even from 357 Magnums. Maybe not quite like the GP100, but pretty close. The full-length underlug that the thing has, well, that helps out with this, you know, again, like the GP100. It's also got a Hoag monogrip on it. That helps out, too. I would personally prefer that it didn't have that infernal lock system. Now, that's true. But I can't say anything bad about the quality of the revolver. There's a reason the company sells so many of them. Now, for those of you who have been at this a while, you know about the models 65 and the 66 that this newer model 686 replaced. Model 65 and 66, those guns are legendary for sweet-shooting, top-notch, carryable revolvers. There's a good reason Taurus copied that, you know, that design with their own model 65, and that's what we talked about earlier. So, how does the 686 stack up compared to its older brother? Very well, actually. It's a Smith & Wesson. Shoots top-notch like any other Smith & Wesson. Matter of fact, I view it as a new and improved version of the Model 65 and 66, and I understand why the people who have them love them. And finally, we get to my gun, the Security 6. I know for a fact that this gun was made in 1985, because I called Sturm, Ruger & Company and asked them. I also learned that my revolver was an old police trade-in. Yeah, this gun was Ruger's answer to Smith & Wesson's Model 19, which had become the other standard-issue revolver. That along with the Model 13. Smith & Wesson's Model 19 is, the Model 13, really, is essentially the Model 10, a medium-sized K-frame, but it's chambered in .357 Magnum and was somewhat stronger metal to handle that more powerful Magnum round. Well, old Bill Ruger saw all that money that Smith & Wesson was raking in from police departments, and he said, "Oh, yeah, we want some of that action." So, back in, 1971, they designed a series of revolvers called the 6 Series, which came out the next year in 72. Mine is one of them. The Security 6 is the first double-action revolver Ruger ever came out with. All their other double-action revolvers, that includes the GP100, the Red Hawk, and the Super Red Hawk, they're all based on this design. Matter of fact, tell you how similar they are. Field stripping the GP100 and the Super Red Hawk is identical to how you'd field strip the Security 6, and the original Red Hawk is not much different. It's a solid, really strong design. My particular example has had plenty of .38 Special and .357 Magnum rounds through it, I can assure you, and I'm not even the first owner. It's definitely the handgun I practice with the most. The reasons are, I can make ammo for it very inexpensively, and also, even though it's way overbuilt like all Ruger revolvers are, it's got the half lug like a Smith & Wesson or a Taurus. And, it just feels really well balanced in the hand. It doesn't feel as barrel heavy as a GP100. Now, the chambers in my gun are just a little bit, just slightly generous, so I cast my bullets just a little on the bigger side for this gun. Doesn't take any extra effort, and it works out very well. So, how does it shoot? Isn't that the ultimate test? How does it shoot? Well, it's a Ruger. They've always made quality firearms. My gun is no exception. It's got the adjustable sights, so once I dialed it in, shoots right where I point it. Like with many used guns, this one's had a quote-unquote trigger job consisting of years and years of use. So it's pretty smooth at this point. No, not as smooth as the Smith & Wesson's, to be sure. Again, it's hard to get that smooth, but it's still pretty darn good. I really enjoy range time with it. I've mentioned my Super Red Hawk 454 before. That thing is a beast. Compared to that behemoth, the Security 6 is dirt cheap to practice marksmanship with. Seriously, you can afford to reload for this thing. It's also a lot lighter than the Super Red Hawk. That's not hard to do. By the way, that starts to matter after you've been out there on the range for 45 minutes. Come to think of it, it feels about as heavy as a S&W Model 686, actually. So, we've done a lot of talking about 5 revolvers. 5 of those that I've gotten a lot of quality range time with. Is there a winner here? Yep, there most certainly is. The winner is you, the buyer. Yeah, you, the buyer. Here's why. Any one of these are good, solid choices. None of them have any glaring faults that would make me say no to them, and I'd very happily own any of them. If I personally had to make a choice, I'd probably go for the Security 6 simply based on personal preference. I know others who swear by some of the Smith & Wessons, both the Model 10s and Model 686s. There's a 14-year-old girl I know who just loves, quote-unquote, her Model 686. It's the cutest thing in the world. Her parents bought it basically for her to shoot, but of course they enjoy it a lot too. Really nice family, and I'm glad they're teaching their daughter how to shoot, and she seems to really enjoy it. So which one should you choose? Folks, I'm serious. You really can't go wrong with any of these. I'm not trying to pretend like I'm, somehow trying not to play favorites here. There really is not a bad one among these. So if you're thinking about a revolver, I'd say try out as many of them as you can to see what you like. It's going to be different for each person, and all of them will last you for a good long while. See if your range rents guns. Try some out. Take a little test drive. Folks, we're fortunate today that just about all the manufacturers make very good quality firearms for us to buy and enjoy. And that's why you, the buyer, are the real winner here. That's why I put it that way. This is Cowboy T signing off until next time. Till then, safe shooting, keep practicing, and happy holidays.